Hello, everyone, and thanks for hanging out with us for the Behind the Numbers Weekly Listen Holiday Special Giant Quiz, a new marketer podcast made possible by Basis Technologies. This is the Friday show. Normally, today it's Thursday, though, because we're off tomorrow. The review's the most important and this year festive media news stories of the week. But we won't really be doing that. We'll mainly be playing the game. I'm your host, Marcus Johnson. Let's play. Join me for this episode. We have with us three people. Let's meet them. We start with our director of reports editing. It's Rahul Chadha.
Hi, nice to be here.
Hey, chap. Thanks for hanging out. We're also joined by one of our analysts on the retail and e-commerce team. It's Blake Droche.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Hey, fella. And finally, we have our principal analyst who heads up our advertising and media practice. It's Paul Werner.
Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, extra points for Paul already. Yes. Paul starts on 1 point. And welcome to the Weekly Listen Holiday Special Giant Quiz. We decided just to play a quiz. The entire episode is a quiz. We've got some news stories kind of sprinkled in, so you'll learn something. But mainly, we're going to be playing a fun quiz. And you can actually play along yourself. You can keep a tally of your points as you go and see if you can beat our analysts. We have four rounds for you. And we have 42 points up for grabs. Actually, Paul, yeah, I've got to take away your free point because otherwise I can't give free points to the listeners. So you've lost already.
It was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, it was brief. We've got four rounds for you, starting with stories of the year. It's our first round. So basically, we're going to go through. I am going to give you guys a question. You're going to give me an answer. I'll let you know how many points are up for grabs per question. They're all multiple choice. So yeah, that's how you can play along. You can guess what it's going to be at home. I will give you the correct answer after I've got all the analyst answers, and then you can give yourself a point and collect your points. Well, I'll give the point totals as we go through the game. We start, folks, with, as I said, stories of the year. The first one, this year, the latest installment of James Bond films was released, called No Time to Die, featuring Daniel Craig. But how many James Bond films are there? 27, 29, or 31? 1 point for the right answer. Rahul, Paul, and then Blake.
I'm going to go conservative and say 27.
Okay.
I'm going to go right down the middle and say 29.
I'm also going to say 27, but if all of these questions are related to British culture, I'm just going to tap out right now, so let me know.
I may have rigged it that way, yes. 27 is the correct answer. So that's 1 point for Rahul, one for Blake. One for you at home if you got that right. Okay, second question. The delayed Euro 2020 football tournament took place in 2021, seeing Italy beat England in the finals. I'm still not okay. But how many countries have won the World Cup since it was first held in 1930? How many countries have won the World Cup since it was first held in 1930? 8, 10, or 12?
Wow, I was going to guess 14 before I realized there was an option. So I have no idea. Are we playing Price is Right rules? I'm still going to go conservative. Was it 8? Was that the lowest one?
I still haven't watched that. I feel like I need to watch that because every time we play a game, someone references that.
It's like you got to go under. If you go over, you're out. So under,
no.
Safe, basically.
Okay. Yeah, no, we're not doing those rules.
Yeah.
Let's start with Paul, then Blake, then Rahul.
8.
Okay. Blake?
Well, I don't know anything about soccer, so I'm just going to follow Paul and go with 8.
Okay.
I'm going to guess 10 just to be contrarian.
And it is 8 teams. Just 8 countries have won the World Cup. So that's Brazil, Italy, Germany, Argentina, Uruguay, France, England, so long ago, and Spain. It says here definitely not America. I don't know why that's written down, but
we're busy playing so real sports.
Real sports, not playing the one sport that's the most popular in the entire in the world, but it's fine. Blake, you got that one right. Miracle. Okay, let's move on to our third question. This year also saw the hosting of the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, but which of these sports will not be hosted at the upcoming 2024 Olympic Games to be held in Paris. So which of these five will not be hosted at the upcoming Olympic Games, 2024 Games in Paris? Skateboarding, climbing, surfing, karate, or breakdancing? That is skateboarding, climbing, surfing, karate, or breakdancing.
Only one of those will not be hosted?
Yep.
Wow.
Blake, you're up, then Rahul, and then Paul.
Considering that Paris is landlocked, I'm going to go surfing as the logical answer.
Okay. Logic. I like that.
I feel like breakdancing is the obvious answer because I don't know what competitive breakdancing looks like, but I'm just going to go with karate.
Okay. Paul?
I'm going to go with surfing as well.
Okay. Rahul got this one correct. It's karate. So karate did feature at the Olympics, but karate and baseball are going to be dropped from 2024, which is proving to be pretty controversial. I think wrestling was under threat as well, but they lobbied that, and that's back in. But yeah, skateboarding, climbing, surfing, and breakdancing will all be newly added events at the upcoming 2024 Olympic Games. Move to our final question of the round. On February 18th, NASA's Mars 2020 mission, containing the Perseverance rover and Ingenuity helicopter drone, landed on Mars after 7 months of travel. Mars has 63% less gravity than we're used to, so you can jump higher and further. But which planet has the greatest gravitational pull? Which planet in our solar system has the greatest gravitational pull? If anyone knew a planet outside of our solar system, then I'd be impressed. But let's stick with the 8/controversial 9. Which one? Rahul, Paul, and then Blake.
I'm just going to guess Jupiter.
Paul, you're up.
Mercury.
I think it's also Mercury.
Okay. Answers are in. What did you folks think at home, wherever you're listening? It's Jupiter. Jupiter is the correct answer. Well played to Rahul. You would weigh 2.5 times on Jupiter what you would on Earth. Sounds horrible. All right, that's the end of Stories of the Year. And at this point, let's have a look at the tallies. Rahul has 3 points, Blake has 2, and Paul has 1 point. So if you've got 4, you're ahead of our analysts at this juncture. All right, that's what we've got time for Stories of the Year. Time now for our second round. Game of the week, today's game. What's the data point? Trivia edition. See what I did there?
Very clever.
It's normally what's the point?
Let's keep it moving, okay. Marcus.
All right, fair enough. I'm going to read out 4 stories and our contestants will answer a slightly related multiple choice question. Let's start with round one. We start with Paul. Instagram and kids. Instagram recently announced new tools aimed at keeping teenagers on the platform safe, including parental controls and restrictions on public-facing teen accounts, writes insider intelligence analyst Nina Getson. Nina thinks that parents and lawmakers may feel these tools are needed to protect teens' online privacy and mental health, but makes the great point that adding more limitations could make the platform even less appealing for the very users Instagram wants to attract. However, folks, which social network has more 12 to 24-year-olds in the US? 12 to 24-year-old users in the US. Which social network has more 12 to 24-year-old users in the US? Is it Instagram, TikTok, or Snapchat? We'll start with Paul, then Blake, then Rahul.
This one, I think, is a moving target and maybe a little counterintuitive, because I think TikTok is gaining, but I want to say it's still Instagram.
Okay. Blake?
I'm going to say Snapchat.
And I'm just going to go TikTok to keep things interesting.
Very nice. Very nice. The correct answer is Snapchat. Snapchat's the correct answer. It is pretty close. 41.7 million to be specific for Snapchat. Then TikTok with 36.8. And then Instagram 35.5. Those are from our very own forecasting team. Yeah, also worth noting, Instagram said that in early 2022, they're going to let users go back to the chronological feed like it was over 5 years ago now. So an interesting point on a bit of news from Instagram recently. So Blake got that one. So Blake gets a point, first point of this second round. We move to the next question. We start with Blake for this one, then Rahul, then Paul. 2 billion Instagram people. It's taken them just over 11 years, but Instagram has just crossed the 2 billion active user mark, notes Sarah Fisher of Axios, citing CNBC reports. Instagram joins an exclusive club of just 4 social apps that have hit that milestone, she writes. Meta owns 3 of the 4. YouTube is the other one. But what share of American internet users use Instagram? What share of American internet users use Instagram? We start with Blake, 41%, 43%, or 45%?
I'm going to go with 43%.
Okay. Rahul, then Paul.
I'm going to say 41.
I'm going to say 41.
41% it is. Very close, gents. So 1 point for Rahul, 1 point for Paul. Those numbers from our forecasting team as well. Instagram has been desperately trying to stay ahead of TikTok, notes Emma Roth of The Verge, the fast-growing short-form video app that just crossed the 1 billion user mark in September. That's just 3 years after the app merged with Musical.ly and became widely available. So they reached 1 billion after just 3 years. Instagram, 2 billion after just over 11. But yeah, a lot harder to get to 2 billion than the first 1 billion, I'm sure. Let's move to our third question here. We're going to start with Rahul. Likeless social media. As social media platforms come under fire for their impact on mental health, some are testing the removal of likes, writes insider intelligence analyst Rachel Wolf. Instagram officially rolled out the option to hide like counts to all users back in May, and last month YouTube said it would no longer make dislike counts public as it tries to protect against dislike attacks. But what is the number one attribute American adults would like to see from brands? Number one attribute American adults would like to see from brands. Fun, authentic, or adventurous? Rahul, Paul, Blake.
I'm going to guess authentic.
And I swear I was going to guess authentic before Rahul did too.
It's very inauthentic. Unauthentic? Both.
I'd like to offer a more diverse answer here, but I'm also going to go with authentic.
Okay.
Put all our eggs in one basket on this one.
Authentic it is. Well played, folks. Point each. That source is from R.R. Donnelly and Sons Company. Move to our final question of the round, in-store shopping. While retail spending is thriving, we're not out of the woods from a safety perspective, notes a recent piece in Retail Dive. This holiday season, 53% of folks have safety concerns about shopping in store, though 55% say mask usage and frequent sterilization makes them more comfortable. Curbside pickup and click and collect also add to a sense of safety for 52% of consumers. But in 2025, what share of shopping will be done online in the US? In 2025, what share of shopping will be done online in the US? Is it 20, 22, or 24%? We start with Paul, then Blake, then Rahul.
I'm going to go high on this one and say 24%.
I'll go 22.
And I choose to copy the e-commerce analyst and also say 22%.
It is 22%, but good job, Paul, for going out on a limb on that one. That's 1 point to Blake, 1 point to Rahul. And those numbers are also from our own forecasting team here at Insider Intelligence. That is the end of the round. And that round, Rahul got 3, as did Blake. Paul got 2 points. Total scores at the half. Rahul has 6, Paul has 3, Blake has 5. So Rahul's out in front, Blake in second, Paul in third place.
I could have really used that point at the beginning. It's costing me big now.
That's all we got time for the first half of the show. We'll be back in the second half with more trivia questions for you folks. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, Basis Technologies. Today's podcast is made possible by Basis Technologies. Basis Technologies has created a digital advertising platform that connects people, automates processes, and unifies channels, bringing together programmatic, site direct, search, social, and CTV into one single interface. And through the power of automation, Basis enable brands, agencies, and publishers to build and operate a healthy, secure, efficient, and profitable advertising organization. Ready to take control of your advertising? Just go to basis.net today. That's www.basis.net. Basis Technologies, the future of advertising has arrived. All right, folks, we are back. We've got two more rounds for you of the Weekly Listen Holiday Special Giant Quiz. Let's start with the third round of the show, which is kind of working from somewhere. Got a bunch of questions for you here. Some questions can have the option of 3 points, so lots of points to play for. Six questions in this round. We start with the first question, and we start with Blake. Blake, in 2019, what share of employed people did some or all of their work at home on days they worked, according to a study by the Bureau of Labor Statistics? That's a complicated way of saying how many people worked from home. But being specific, what share of employed people did some or all of their work at home on days that they worked? What share of people who were employed worked from home? A little bit or all of the time? 9%, 16%, or 24%?
And this is for every type of job?
Yes. Yeah, this is just, the way it's phrased is just employed people from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Sure. Yep.
I'm going to go with 9%.
Okay. Rahul, then Paul.
I'm going to go 24%.
Okay.
I would have thought it'd be even higher, so I'm going to go with 24.
Okay. 24% it is. Mm. Astonishingly high. I guess they did say could do some, all of their work. So maybe if you're doing like even just a fraction of it, then you could be counted in that. So maybe that's tipped the scales. But that's 1 point for Rahul, 1 point for Paul. Move to our second question. We start with Rahul. What share of global companies are now fully remote? What share of global companies are now fully remote according to Owl Labs? 16, 18, or 20%?
I'm just going to split the difference and say 18.
Okay. Paul?
16.
Blake?
Yeah, I'm going to go 18 as well.
Paul gets the solo point, 16.
About time.
16% of companies are now fully remote, according to Owl Labs. That's globally. Question three, we start with Paul. In 2019, how long was the average one-way commute in the U.S.? In 2019, how long was the average one-way commute in the U.S.? 28 minutes, 31 minutes, or 34 minutes? 28, 31, or 34 minutes?
I'm going to go high and say 34.
Okay. Blake, then Rahul.
I'll go 28.
I'll say 28 too.
28 minutes it is. 28 minutes. Blake gets a point. Rahul gets a point. Yeah, and it's not moved at all. I think for about a decade, it's been pretty much dead even. It might have gone up or down by a minute, but it's pretty horizontal. Question four. We start with Blake. Name the state with the longest average commute by car one way. Name the state with the longest average commute by car one way. Is it Maryland, New York, or DC? Is it Maryland, New York, or DC?
Is this minutes in the car or distance?
Yep. This is minutes.
Minutes in the car. I'm going to say DC.
Okay. Rahul, then Paul.
I will guess. I'll go with my home state of Maryland.
Yeah, this one's tricky because I have a feeling that a lot of Maryland commuters are commuting to DC. So I don't know how they count that, but I'm also going to go with Maryland.
DC is out by quite a margin somehow. I guess this is traffic.
See, I think you guys were thinking about it the same way. I was thinking that not a lot of people live in DC proper where they work and that they're coming in from Maryland, Virginia, etc. But I was thinking DC, I thought we were going by the place where the office is, not where the folks live.
So basically Blake cheated.
No, I just interpreted it correctly.
not to mention that DC is not a state, but we're going to leave all those.
Blake cheated by being smarter than us.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Why is DC on this bloody list? Yeah. Sorry about this question. I had a feeling this would happen with every question.
Well, I've kept my mouth shut on a lot of
we've got quite far through, considering I made them all up myself. Yeah, I should have said place. Which place? Victoria, put place in so I don't sound stupid.
Leave that.
Yeah, DC, for DC, 44 minutes, New York, 35, Maryland, 31. Who pointed out that it's not a state?
That's Paul.
I did.
You should get an extra point again, Paul, but I can't do that because the listeners don't get one.
So. Yeah. Well, you know,
you would be way out in front of this.
Well, if you're thinking at home, if you're at home thinking that was a dumb question because DC is not a state, then give yourself an extra point.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's be generous. You probably should. And I do have a lot of issues with the way some of these questions are phrased, but I'm waiting. I'm waiting until I finish losing to just complain that the whole game is rigged. And on the very, very, very slight chance that I win, then I'm not going to make any complaints at all.
It's convenient. How when people lose, they always think it's rigged. When they win, no complaints at all.
Exactly. I mean, there are only so many days left in the year. If we had, you know, took our issue with every question, we'd be here a while.
I think you're doing a great job, Marcus. Just
thanks,
in case,
buddy.
Just in case there are bonus points to be awarded at the end, please keep that.
There just might be. We'll call it the Rahul round, where no one else can play. Okay, so the states with the shortest commutes, actual states this time, are South Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana, each with 17 minutes. Question 5. Give me 3 of the top 5 benefits of working from home, according to a January 2021 YouGov survey of remote workers. So there's a top 5 list. You're going to try to give me just 3 of them, and it's 1 point for each of those. Let's start with Rahul for this one.
What do people like about working from home? No commute, flexibility in work time, and the ability to nap. Not that I do this. I just want to make that clear.
Which means he definitely,
but, you know, the ability to take a nap when you want.
Often. Okay. Okay, cool. Then Paul.
Okay, flexibility, cost savings, and I guess no commute, but I was thinking more along the lines of stress reduction from not commuting, but I don't know. Okay. I mean, you know, I guess if our answers have to match the survey.
No, exactly. Okay. I'm going to liberal interpretation of
all right.
You
so stress reduction
there.
From not commuting.
Okay. And Blake.
Yeah. So definitely no commute. I'm going to say fewer distractions and more flexibility, like the opportunity to get things done around the house.
Okay. All right. You each got 2. Each got 2 points. So we've got no commute. We've got flexible hours. We've got the ability to dress more casually, the ability to do small household tasks whilst working, and the ability to socially distance. 1 point for each of those. We move to our final question in this round, question number 6, and we start with Paul. Name the 3 biggest challenges associated with remote work, according to Buffer. Name the 3 biggest challenges associated with remote work, according to Buffer.
Okay, not having FaceTime with your colleagues, real FaceTime, not Apple FaceTime.
Okay.
Let's see. Too much time on screen and not knowing how your work is measured or received.
Okay, interesting.
In other words, how you don't know how you're doing if you know you don't get the more in-person feedback.
Mm-hmm. Difficult to measure performance.
Yeah.
Blake?
I go lack of communication, distractions, and inadequate office setup, like, you know, not having a proper computer, desk chair, etc.
Mm-hmm. Rahul?
I'm going to go the inability to draw like a work-life boundary easily. I guess this is really general, but communication challenges. And then third, a complete inability to tap into juicy office gossip easily.
It's hard to do that when you're napping, Rahul.
You got to give him a bonus point for that one. Come on.
Yeah, let's give him one.
I can't. Well, look, maybe I could give you one for the end of the game when you're not playing against the contestants, just against these guys. I'll give you a bonus one for that. But don't worry, listeners, he doesn't get a bonus one against you. So there'll be 2 scores, everybody and then just the guys on the panel. Okay, that was pretty good. Okay, so Rahul, you got 2, Blake 1, Paul 1. So they were unplugging after work, loneliness, and communication. Rahul, your last one of not getting the juicy gossip, I thought that could be loneliness, but it wasn't quite specific enough, I think. So just the 2 points there. All right. That's all we got time for this round, kind of working from somewhere. Let's take a check of the scores. That round, Rahul won it. 6 points to him, 5 points to Paul and Blake as well. Blake got 5. So the total scores after 3 rounds heading into the final round here. Rahul has 12, Blake has 10, and Paul has 8 points. Right, time now for the final round of today. It's double points dinner party data. Part of the show where we typically would tell you the most interesting thing that we've learned this week. I do have some interesting things for you, and we also have some dinner party data gifts for you at the end. So we still have dinner party data for you right at the very end of the show. But for now, we're going to play the round, the final round of the game, double points dinner party data. Each of these answers are worth double points, so it's all to play for. We've got 3/4 rounds here. The first one is called the top 10 worldwide emojis. 92% of the world's online population use emojis, according to Unicode. But which emoji or emojis are we using the most? Apparently, there are over 3,600 of these things. But you guys have to try to name 3 of the top 10 emojis used worldwide this year. 3 of the top 10 emojis used worldwide. You're just going to have to describe the ones that you're thinking of. So this could be fun. But it's double points. And we start with Blake.
All right. I'm going to go smiley face, standard smiley face, standard heart, and then my favorite emoji and the only emoji that I use, thumbs up.
It's the only one you use.
Well, I use 2. Thumbs up. Thumbs down. That's
thumbs
it.
Thumbs down.
No more emojis.
I get a sense you're unhappy about the removal of likes and dislikes from social media platforms.
The YouTube dislike thing is that's going to be the participation trophy of this upcoming generation.
It's like
if you don't know your videos bad. Yeah. These kids are going to grow up posting videos and not know that they suck.
Okay, we've got Rahul next.
I'm going to guess laughing with tears. I don't know if that's the right way, but I think everybody knows what I'm describing. My personal favorite, and what I would describe as my spirit emoji, is the shrug emoticon. I don't know if that counts as an emoji, if it's an emoticon.
That's 100%
I feel like it applies
emoji,
for like almost 99.9% of situations is the appropriate response. And then I'm just going to throw out a... I'm trying to think of a wild card here.
Are you working today, Rahul?
Shrug emoji.
Are you? Oh yeah. Is there like a napping emoji? Maybe the Z's coming out. I'll go with that one.
Close second for you, definitely. Okay, got you. Very nice, Paul.
Okay, so I'm going to start with the rolling on the floor laughing, which I think is the one Rahul was referring to. There are two variations of that: one with like a tilted head and one with a straight head. I don't know if we're differentiating to that point, but I'll just say rolling on the floor laughing. Then I'm going to go with smiley face. And for the third one, as much as I'd love to give an honorable mention to the steaming pile of, we'll just say poop, because I think it's probably pretty popular, I'm actually going to go with a heart for the third one.
Okay. So Blake and Paul each got 2 of those right, so 4 points each, and Rahul got 1, so 2 points each. The top 10 are the laughing with tears, then the heart, then the laughing with tears sideways face, or like at an angle, then the thumbs up, laughing, just crying, like waterfalls out of your eyes. It's pretty intense. High five, then kissing and winking with the heart, then hearts all around, blushing face, heart eyes, and then the blushing smiley face. That's your top 10 for world. We move to our next question. The top 10 worldwide Google searches. Top 10 worldwide Google searches. Name 3 of the top 10 worldwide Google searches for 2021. We start with Rahul.
Okay, I'm just going to draw from my own personal search history here. Well, 1, I would say, who is Dua Lipa? 2, I would say, why do they call soccer football in England? And 3, I'm going to just throw out how to get away with napping at work.
Okay. Worldwide searches. Okay. Let's go. Let's
go. I'm not going to do well this round.
No. Well, great. Paul, you're up.
So this is worldwide, not US?
Yes. Okay. Top 10 worldwide Google searches. If you can give me 3 of the top 10.
Okay.
Any 3 of the top 10.
Let's go with cryptocurrency, Euro 2021, and how about Megan Thee Stallion?
Okay. Blake?
I'm going to go with vaccine, Olympics, and TikTok.
Good guesses, mate. But none of them... I haven't pressed the bell in a while. The hell with it. Yeah, none of them there, unfortunately.
None of them.
Wait, did you say... Yeah, you said the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
None of them. Yeah, I'll give you them in a second. But Paul, you picked up 2 points for your Euro 2021 mention. So number one, Australia versus India. Number two, India versus England. These are cricket. Number three, IPL, Indian Premier League. Number four, NBA. Number five, Euro 2021. Number six, Copa America. Number seven, India versus New Zealand. Number eight, the T20 World Cup. Again, cricket. And number nine, Squid Game. Number 10, DMX. But considering that India has 1.3 billion people, second largest country in terms of people on the planet, they're definitely skewed towards Indian folks and what they love. And considering that cricket is basically a religion, there, half of the top 10 worldwide searches were cricket related.
And it's the largest country that has access to Google, right? This is a Google search?
Google searches, yeah. Oh, very nice. Blake, got to give you an extra point for that. Very nice, sir. Extra point there at the end. I should take one away because you make fun of cricket and England invented it, and apparently it's responsible for all of these searches, but I'll give you it anyway.
It's unfortunate.
Surprised I wasn't more interested in napping.
It's unfortunate that we invented it. Really? That's the shocker for you, Rob.
Yeah, I'm still shocked. Okay. Not that I nap at work. I just want to make that clear.
All right, let's move to our next question. Are Marvel fans getting tired of superhero films? According to Morning Consult, 41% of adults enjoy superhero movies and will continue to see them. 23% enjoy them, but are getting a little tired of so many of them. But, and this is two questions, so this is our final question. We'll go superheroes and then we'll go villains. So, if you could each, starting with Paul, name three of America's top five favorite superheroes. It's according to a survey of 2,000 Americans conducted by One Poll. Name three of America's top five favorite superheroes.
Okay.
And just to let you guys know, you're all on 14 points, so it's all to play for. Wow.
I'm going to go with my personal favorite, Batman. I'm going to go with my five-year-old across the street neighbor's personal favorite, Spider-Man. And I think it's going to be a toss-up between Superman and Captain America, but I'm going to go with Superman, also a childhood personal favorite. So I'm going pretty old school here.
He's going old school, yeah. All right, Blake.
Yeah, I don't know anything about superheroes, so I'm going to go with the most generic ones. Superman, Batman, and I'll go Captain America, even though I think it's a toss-up between those four, but We'll leave Spider-Man out of this for now.
Raul?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Superman, Batman, and Spider-Man.
Okay, nice job, folks. 2 points each. Superman is Americans' number one first favorite, 47%. Spider-Man, 46%. Batman, 45%, very close at the top. Captain America, 42%. How is that possible? It's Captain America. Iron Man, 41% for Iron Man in fifth place. Okay, we move to the second part of this question, and we're going villains. So if you can name three of America's top five favorite villains, we start with Blake, then Rahul, then Paul.
The Joker, Lex Luthor, and so this is where my lack of knowledge of superheroes is going to get to me, but I still don't regret not watching them. I'll go with Bane.
Okay. Rahul.
Yeah, I'm going to copy the first two. I'll say the Joker and Lex Luthor. And then I don't know, maybe I just guess Thanos, maybe due to the influence of the Marvel movies.
Paul?
Okay, definitely the Joker. I mean, I think he may be one of the only villains that has like a movie franchise just about him. Am I right? Or... this is definitely not an area of expertise for me, but also going to go with Lex Luthor. And for the third one, I'm going to say Dr. Doom.
Okay. Answers are in. Just going to press that for the sake of pressing it. The Joker, first place, 31%. Catwoman, 26%.
Is she a villain?
Good question. I feel like she's a bit unsure, isn't she? Like she helps him out, yeah, and she hates him.
She's
she helps him out again.
Ambiguous.
I think she's being vilified.
Well played, Paul. I can't give you an extra point there. I'm sorry. Venom, 23%. Thanos is in fourth place, and then Lex Luthor is in fifth place. So that's the end of the game. So let's tally up the scores. This is out of 42 potential points. So listeners at home, if you got more than any of these scores, then you beat our analysts. We have a drum roll, please. I'm just going to announce who won the game. A drum roll still going. Who could it be? Rahul won this week's giant quiz of the year, weekly listen, Christmas holiday special, something. I can't remember what it's called. It's not important. Rahul, you won. 26 points for Rahul. Paul got 24 and Blake got 24 as well. So you know what this means. If you add, so of everybody, if you got more than 26, then you beat Rahul. If you got more than 24, you get 25, then you came in second place. If you got less than 24, shame on you. You got less than analysts and you came in, let's call it last place. Call it what it is. If you add the bonus point for Paul and the bonus point for Blake, makes no difference. They get 25 each and Rahul's still the winner, even amongst the shortlisted group of folks, our panel. So congratulations to Rahul. You won the quiz.
Thank you so much. I would say that if I were to have perhaps taken a nap today, I would credit that to my win.
Yeah, you showed up more rested.
Yeah.
Rahul, congratulations. You get the championship belt, which is meaningless. And do you want some... people normally don't want 30 seconds of airtime to tell folks anything. So you can have it if you like. Oh.
I like to just like reference cultural icons and figures in my figured in my life. I would give a shout out to the cultural critic Greg Tate, who I feel like a lot of my shout outs for people who recently passed. Rest in power, Mr. Tate. He's a great writer, wrote for the Village Voice for a long time. If you're interested in his work, I think a compendium of his essays called Flyboy and the Buttermilk is available. Check him out. He's an amazing writer and really had a huge influence on me back in my days where my aspirations were to be a journalist / cultural writer.
Beautiful. Very nice indeed, sir. All right, folks, that's it for the quiz portion. Let's talk a little dinner party data. How could we not have it right at the end for you folks? Let's start with Rahul because he won the quiz of the year. Rahul, you're up. Dinner party data. All yours, sir.
Yeah, so Statista has surveyed a bunch of adults in the U.S. Just asked them, are you going to put up a Christmas tree this year? And sadly, to me, 47% were planning on putting up an artificial one. A little less than a quarter, 24% are putting up a real one. And almost 20%, 18% just flat out had no plans to put up a Christmas tree.
I'm surprised by that. I feel like everyone I spoke to about Christmas trees, which is there's not that many people, but of the people I spoke to, it's always real tree.
Oh, yeah.
I thought America did the real trees more than you did the artificial ones.
It's changing.
I'm surprised by that.
It's changing. I think artificial trees are kind of back.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm wondering, okay, too, how does like the carbon effects of a farm tree versus an artificial one net out? Like, what is better for the environment? Yeah. We talk about sustainability all the time now, and I'm curious if that's factoring into people's decisions.
You know, I did a lot of research into that very topic around this time last year when I was going to pull it out for dinner party data, and it ended up being so complex that I didn't use it for dinner party data. But basically, there's no right answer, but there are a lot of companies that are making trees from recycled materials and basically keeping a low carbon footprint. At the same time, you know, if you cut down a tree that's been farmed for that purpose and you compost it, it's not really a very heavy use of carbon either. So it's all quite relative and there's really no sort of like, you know, one is better than the other.
Yeah, the thing I was going to say quickly is, reading this the other day, trees, so they're grown across the United States in different conditions. Christmas trees are grown in all 50 US states. Apparently, including Alaska and Hawaii. That was fascinating. Anyway, that's a very good one, Rahul. And yeah, very interesting, Paul. How much time did you spend researching this last year? It was like
too
you were
much,
in there for a while.
Too much time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Any amount of time on this is probably too much.
I got in touch with the Christmas, I forget what it's called, but there's like a Christmas tree trade group, and they of course advocate for natural trees. But
you got in touch with
this guy gave me like tons and tons of data. Like I said, it was just like too much of a good thing, and it was too ambiguous, so I ended up scrapping it. But yeah, I probably researched it for like, I don't know, 3-4 months nonstop.
Of course he gave you too much data. You're probably the only person who's ever called since.
Yeah, he was very happy to hear from me.
He was. And he was like, I told you someone would call. I knew we should have been doing this research.
This year I got a Christmas card from him.
He was really excited at dinner that night, telling his wife what happened at work to him that day.
Amazing. Let's go with Blake.
All right. So, like many people, I've been deeply immersed in this Beatles documentary on Disney Plus, Get Back, which is documentary about the recording of the writing and recording of Let It Be and all of the everything that led to the breakup of the Beatles. And if you've been following the sort of narrative behind the documentary, it does a lot to challenge this notion that Yoko Ono was responsible for breaking up the Beatles. So YouGov America actually polled this month, December 14th and 15th, asking, who broke up the Beatles? Who do you think was most responsible for breaking up the Beatles? And still, even though this documentary, which is wildly popular, has challenged the narrative, 43% of respondents are still blaming Yoko Ono for breaking up the Beatles. And only 26% blame John Lennon, 10% blame Paul McCartney, 9% blaming other, so outside factors.
Other.
And then George and Ringo got 7% and 5%. I mean, who's that 5%? Who's blaming Ringo? He was just along for the ride. But the interesting thing is that it's the boomers who are unwilling to let go of this narrative that vilifies Yoko Ono. Because if you look at the 55 and over crowd, 55% of the 55 and overs blame Yoko Ono, and that just goes down. And when you get to 18 and 24 year olds, just 16% blame Yoko Ono, and 25%, a quarter, are more likely to blame John Lennon. So I just found that, you know, all these years later, people are still blaming Yoko Ono for the breakup of the Beatles. I don't think that it's ever going to change.
She's the Catwoman among Beatles fans.
The morally ambiguous. She's
definitely been vilified. By the way, one of the most, I thought, charming parts of the documentary was when Linda's daughter, Heather McCartney, who was about 5 or 6 years old at the time, she grabs the mic and she basically starts doing an amazing Yoko Ono impression. So she was clearly inspired by Yoko and probably does not feel that Yoko had anything to do with breaking up the Beatles.
Was her impression a banshee wail?
Yeah, I mean, she just basically goes to the mic and does everything she just saw Yoko do 5 minutes earlier.
I was going to say, you can maybe not blame Yoko for breaking up the Beatles, but you can sure blame her for ruining that performance with John Lennon and Chuck Berry that I think has gone viral probably many times at this point.
Very good. Very good. Like, so you said it's a good documentary. How many tomatoes would you give it?
Well, full disclosure, I'm only about halfway through the second of three parts. So like basically smack in the middle of the documentary, and I'm working my way through it. It's like there's a lot, and it's really I would say it's probably only for really intense Beatles fans, but there are some real gems sort of nestled in there, some great moments. So if you are interested in the Beatles and you're killing some time over the holidays, it's a great thing to check out.
Yeah, sorry, I may have ruined it for you, Blake, because the anecdote that I just mentioned is in episode 3, but
no, that's okay.
Great job, Paul. Why even watch the rest, Blake?
I know the spoiler alert is that they break up at the end.
Yes.
So
I agree that it is mostly for the super fan, but I think what the directors basically, in this case, Peter Jackson, I think really what he found was a happy tedium. Because there's a lot of like drawn out stuff, but you know, for Beatles fans,
yeah, that's
they love
a great
it,
way
so.
Of putting it.
Well played, Paul. Well played. Paul, you're up.
Okay, so sticking to the world of music and inspired by Blake, who often has great musical trivia, dinner party data items, I think by now most of us probably heard that Bruce Springsteen made a deal to sell his song rights and master recordings for about $550 million. So Springsteen wrote somewhere around 337 or 340 songs. So just by doing some simple math, that amounts to $1.6+ million per song. Now, this deal is more complex than just song rights, but, you know, we're going to kind of strip it down here and just, you know, just say $1.6 million. So it just goes to show you that we're doing it all wrong, because that's like 10% more than Blake and I get for writing each report. And of course, Rahul being the arbiter of all things reports, he's the one who actually doles out the money. So we only get about $1.4 million. So we're obviously doing something wrong here.
And I will say that my recent digital grocery forecasting report and Jungle Land are probably equally comparable when you think of contributions to the American cultural zeitgeist. So I think that maybe we should renegotiate our contract for 2022.
Bit generous. all right, really quickly, I've got one for you guys. And this is because you guys always mess with me saying that I drink tea. I don't actually drink tea, but I have a tea fact for you anyway. I had it once. That was it. The tea bag was an accidental invention in 1908, and it was invented by an American. New York tea merchant Thomas Sullivan sent samples of tea leaves to some of his customers in small silken bags. Many of the recipients assumed that the bags were supposed to be used in the same way as the metal infusers, so they put the entire bag into the teapot rather than emptying out its contents. And that's how the tea bag came to be.
New Yorkers just have so much ingenuity that they're inventing things without even realizing it. You guys have been drinking tea for hundreds and hundreds of years over there.
It was fine before.
And
it was fine.
And we just, and you never even came thought of just having it. a nice bag. You've had tea leaves stuck between your teeth for hundreds of years. Very off-putting. And then we've, you know, come around with this great invention to bless the rest of the world.
Did I not what mention nice it was story. Accidental? Is that not what I said at the beginning? I can't remember.
Yeah, but that there's just so much ingenuity that we're just discovering
things. They can't help themselves.
Without even trying, okay. Really. It's like second nature.
I think he's being overly generous, listeners, but I do love you, America, so thanks for this one. That's all we've got time for this week's Weekly Listen, and that's the last Weekly Listen of the year. We're off tomorrow, Christmas Eve, but we have some special episodes for you all next week, Monday through Thursday, so make sure you check out those if you need a break from your family over the holidays. Thank you to my guests. Thank you to Rahul.
Thanks so much, gents. Always a pleasure. Happy holidays, everyone.
He won this week's Giant Quiz of the Year. Congratulations to him. Thank you to Blake.
Happy holidays, and we'll see everybody in the new year.
We will indeed. Thank you to Paul.
Thank you, and merry and bright to everyone.
Thank you to Victoria. She edits the shows. She edits them all. Thanks so much to Stuart, also, who runs the team. And thanks to everyone listening. To ask us questions or just say happy holidays, you can email us at podcast@emarketer.com. We'll see you guys on Monday, hopefully, for a special edition of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Basis Technologies. Happy weekends and happiest of holidays.
So PNC Bank does a fun thing every holiday season, which is calculates the price of the 12 gifts from the holiday song, The 12 Days of Christmas.
Oh, no. We had this last week.
Oh, you did?
I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay.
You could blame Susie.
She did what I did, which was Googled fun Christmas data, and that was like the first thing that came up. I dug up one fact.
Perfect.
So, yeah, as a person who did not grow up in a Christian household, I get overly excited. I feel like way more than my wife, who did, about buying a real live Christmas tree every year. So I did find out via Statista that...
Oh, mate, we had this one as well.
Why are these people jumping the gun? I feel like
I'm so sorry.
I never have holiday-themed dinner party data. And
I'm kidding. I was kidding.
Oh my god, are you serious?
We haven't had this one at all. I'm so. I couldn't help myself. I'm so sorry.